This is Disabled Girls Who Lift. We are reclaiming what's rightfully ours one podcast at a time. It's Mary Beth, Chloe, and Marcia bringing you the thoughts and unpopular topics to get you out of that ableist comfort zone. Hello, hello, folks. Welcome to yet another episode of Disabled Girls Who Lift. Thanks again for joining us. Today we have myself, Marcia from South Florida. Unfortunately, our other two co-hosts couldn't make it. That's Mary Beth. We love her. And Chloe, we love her just as much. Everybody the same. There's no favorites, right? Anyways, today we're talking about ataxia. And we have another Canadian friend. So that's two Canadians and counting on Disabled Girls Who Lift. So everyone, I'm going to introduce you to Courtney Ng, who is actually a co-founder of Hope for Ataxia, where they're raising awareness globally. So thanks for coming, Courtney.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited. Thank you for the introduction. So like you said, I am the co-founder of Hope for Ataxia. So we started it in late 2018. It was started as a conversation between friends, and it ignited into a tangible idea. And then, you know, this organization was created, and we have things like support groups. We have social media. We have different fundraising campaigns and awareness campaigns. So we're really excited for the future.
Awesome. That sounds awesome. So you said 2018?
Yeah.
So this is going on your second year. So, I mean, I'm sure you had like an aim and goals and thoughts and plans, and then COVID happened. How has that changed your plans for Hope for Ataxia?
Yeah, so we were actually going to have our first fundraiser for in partnership with Ataxia Canada, and it was called the Ataxia Burpee Challenge. So the idea was that every burpee you do, you also raise, or for every dollar you raise, you do a burpee. So I've had people say, can I just, you know, pay someone so I don't have to do burpees? And I'm like, that's not the point. That's not the point. And so all the funds are going to go to Ataxia Canada. And okay. So they're the national organization within Canada that funds research, awareness, things like that. And we had to postpone the in-person portion of that. So it's going to move to next year, but people can still definitely donate online.
Okay. Are you going to try to have an online version of this event, or have you kind of just totally saving it for next year?
Yeah, we're going to totally just move it to next year. There's a lot of things that we want to do in person. We want to have like a bake sale as well as part of the fundraising. So we want to have the ability to do that.
Yeah, that stinks. And that was going to be in Toronto, where you're from?
Yeah, so just west of the city, just in Mississauga.
Okay, so I'm very Canada ignorant. So Toronto, English speaking?
Yeah.
And big city?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Okay, I'm just making sure I'm painting the right picture here. So do you find that most of the people in your group are from your area, or are they everywhere?
They're everywhere. We have a lot of people from the States. One of the things that makes us really successful is that we've done them we have online support groups. So everything is through teleconferences, whether it's always been online, like a webinar, anything like that.
And that's before COVID. You were already doing. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. You guys, hipsters.
And we've connected with people through like Facebook and different social media platforms. So it's been great. We've met people from overseas, like Australia, Europe, you know, Canada, US. So it's been great to have that sort of global awareness that we're trying to raise.
And as far as Toronto goes, is it accessible? How's it work out living in Toronto?
Yeah, in the downtown core, I would say that parts of it are. I think with any major city, you know, there are, you know, things, but you have to find them. It's not easily.
It's like taking the subway in New York. Sure, there's elevators, but only on this lane at this stop and this street on this line.
Exactly. It's like, well, okay, how do I find that? I've never been here before. So it's a little bit of a scavenger hunt, I guess, to really look out for those things.
That's pretty relatable to what we're going through, I think. So is your group also, is it more of awareness and support, or are you trying to get things more accessible or make assistance programs more accessible? Are you involved in that kind of projects too?
Right. Yeah. So we're really focused on raising ataxic awareness globally. And it's more so focused on raising awareness and providing support and providing socialization. So with ataxia, it's a very rare condition. So, according to the National Ataxia Foundation, which is the national organization in the US, there's about 150 people with hereditary or sporadic ataxia.
Right.
And then in Canada, it's like 4 to 5% of that number, so it's even less. So,
Wow.
I don't know what the stats are in other countries because some of that information isn't as available. And that just shows you how rare it is.
So, like, step one is like, hi, we exist. Let's
Yeah.
find each other.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
There's groups that are made for that. And it's nice to be able to know what exists in your area, and you could connect people to things that exist. But it's actually really hard. It's actually really hard to
Yeah.
just exist, step one, to find people
Yeah.
that are living your life, and then figure out, okay, how do I get what I need where I'm at? It's
Exactly.
overwhelming, honestly.
Exactly. Especially, because when you're diagnosed with something like this, it's progressive and it's degenerative. So there is no cure. It's a chronic illness, and so it's difficult. You can be diagnosed when you're young, you can be diagnosed in older age as well. And to have that change and that adjustment in your life can really altering. And it's really isolating, to have anyone who can empathize or to understand what you're going through.
Right. And as far as, so you mentioned you could be diagnosed at different ages. Are most people, when they come out the womb, they're like, something's up with this baby? Or do you hit like 20 and they're like, oh, by the way? Or is it like 50s? Where are you talking about?
Great question. So it really depends on the type of ataxia. So there's a specific type called AT. So it's ataxia telangiectasia, and it mostly occurs in ch children. So like toddlers, very young children. And so parents might notice that, their child's like falling over or there's some symptoms. And so they get them checked out and then it goes from there in terms of a diagnosis and things.
Right.
For me, I've had it my whole life, but I didn't get symptoms until I was about 19. You can also get symptoms at a young adult age. It's really when you start noticing things like you might be slurring or things that you used to be doing were easy and it was, second.
Right.
You didn't think about it, and now they're more difficult, like running or you're just more tired, things like that. And then if when you're older, you could be there could be something like could be acquired as well. So if you were in any sort of traumatic injury, like a brain trauma, anything that affects the cerebellum, that part of the brain, you can also have ataxia that way as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting because like in so I'm a physical therapist, and when we're in school, they really teach us in general, like, all right, this part of the brain's for this part of the brain's for that, and like, oh yeah, this could happen here, and then but in general, when it comes to ataxia, it was kind of like a symptom. So it's like, oh, there's Parkinson's, there's MS, and then maybe it looks like this, and it was like listed, like under everything else. So now that I'm out in the world and on the internet, and people like you are messaging us like, hey, I have this. I'm like, holy shit, this is like a whole thing by itself, and it fucking sucks by itself too. Like, why have we been downplaying this? Like, I'm just totally mind blown that this could be its own thing. Is it fairly new that these like is it genetic testing that's new and they just found it and that's why you have these numbers now?
I would say no, that is not fairly new. I think testing has developed, and it's better now in terms of, let's say, someone's getting a genetic panel, that sort of test, they might have developed a better one or a different one now versus like 15 years ago. So then there, and there's like over 60 types of ataxia. So ataxia is sort of almost like an umbrella of like movement disorders, and then within that you have a bunch of different types of it.
Right.
So it could be a genetic version, or it can be acquired. So in terms of how early it was, I think it started, I would say, I it's hard, I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but I wouldn't say it's not, it's recent.
I would think so. There's a lot of things that are moving along pretty quickly in the medical field. Even from the time that I went to school and I graduated, like 6 years ago, from the time then to now, I've already learned tons of things that didn't even exist when I was in school. So I can only imagine that's changing. Is there a big delay for you and the people that you're meeting for treatment? Because I feel like me as a med, I'm on the side of medical professional, and I could see, all right, things are not always going to be the same. I won't always understand everything. But then I am the patient, and I see a medical professional, and they don't have that mindset at all. They're just like, I know things. Is that happening to you, or to the people in your group in general?
So in terms of I guess getting diagnosed, it varies. Like for me, I was really lucky and it didn't take me very long. So I got diagnosed within a year. So within that year, I was sent to different specialists, and it was a low waiting game, waiting for the genetics test to come back for me and things like that. But it really depends on the type of ataxia. I do think that, we are sometimes, in some cases, we know more than medical professionals, because we're the experts of our own lives.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, exactly. We're the experts of our own lives. Like, I know that, okay, you think I could squat heavy, that's nice, but I know 2 years ago when I was down at the bottom, I didn't feel like this. Or I know that the next day, my butt wouldn't be spasming for half the day. Like, these little things that you're living, like, you know that. And just have somebody tell you, like, eh. Like, so for me, that's pretty amazing that in under a year you got genetic testing. I don't know how health insurance works, but for me, the only reason I got to genetic testing, which didn't answer my questions, I still don't have a diagnosis, was because I had good quote unquote health insurance. So if I didn't have government insurance because my husband's military, I wouldn't have gotten it. So I'm sure that's a barrier for a lot of people that have a genetic reason for their ataxia or whatever else.
Definitely. I mean, I'm being Canada is, definitely different than being in the States in terms of access to the testing. So what happened was, for a genetics test, they told me it would cost $7,000.
Mine was 17 grand, by the way.
So I remember mine was $7,000, and they had to write a letter to the Ministry of Health so that it went to the States and that it was covered through our free healthcare.
Right.
Otherwise, if it wasn't covered, I would pay out of pocket. And so, for a lot of people, that really racks up because, I lucked out. One genetics test, can tell you what you have, but then it can come back and be like, well, you've nothing on here. You can do another one. You can do
Yeah.
another one. You can do another one. So, it really adds up in the end, and especially if you don't have, those resources, it's really difficult.
Yeah, it's really sad that this is such a barrier to just getting the answer you need. And not necessarily 'cause we're chasing like a cure, right? We're at least just tracing the treatment. How can you don't know what you have, you don't know what you need to do. So it's really sad there's such a big barrier. So yeah, mine was $17,000. The only reason I didn't pay any of that is because I had good insurance. So if I had the crappy insurance that I had before, number one, it probably wouldn't have gotten approved. But number two, if it did, I would have had to pay 40% of that cost.
Oh, wow. That's still a lot. That's a lot.
So can you imagine how many people are out there who might not even have insurance at all?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing. Like, we have the numbers that we have are of people that we know of, you know, that have the condition. But then there are some people that are misdiagnosed or undiagnosed.
Right.
So the numbers could be a little higher. You know, we don't know.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I'm sure there's people that are... So I don't know if you listened to Christy's episode. It was a little earlier. It might have been like the fourth or fifth. But she has rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And she didn't get diagnosed until, like you, I think 19-ish, 20s.
Yeah.
But when she looked back at her life, she was like, yo, duh.
Like, yeah, I really did that. I thought that makes so much sense. Like, so many things that I thought... you know, I thought were just normal everyday occurrences for me, but after I got diagnosed, I was like, oh, that's why I'm always tired. You know, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. That's why I always need like naps and stuff. And, you know, like, why am I always like, doesn't matter how I used to lift and I used to work out. So I was like, doesn't matter how much I exercise, I still seem to be really tired and out of breath. You know, is this part of like what I'm going through? Like, there were things like that for sure.
Yeah, that's wild. And once you actually got your answer, like, okay, this is what's happening, did your how you defined yourself change?
Yeah. So, I have a neurologist that I'm going to see for life, and he's going to essentially monitor my condition. But the doctors don't really have a solution or a cure. There really isn't any cure for ataxia. It's more for the symptoms. So over time, you know, people can have symptoms like slurred speech. They can have like tremors, gait abnormalities, like their fine motor skills might deteriorate. Things might happen. They might need walking aids over time. So, you know, I know the advice that was given to me was, make sure you exercise and, you know, continue seeing a neurologist.
Drink a lot of water and then schedule your checkups. Bye.
It was like, I was like, okay, so really it's up to me to really, you know, make that sort of change and experiment with different things that might work for me. So whether it's experimenting with my diet, experimenting with exercise, you know, seeing what works for me.
Right. Mm-hmm. And as far as you pulling up to somebody saying, hi, I have this, I am what would you call yourself? A spoonie, chronically ill, disabled? Do you say differently abled? Do you say nothing at all? Do you not disclose it?
So it's interesting because I think I'm a bit of a spoonie, mm-hmm. in the sense that, you know, I guess I have the fatigue. I don't have chronic pain, knock on wood, but it's also a bit of an invisible illness for me,
right,
at the stage of my life, because I was diagnosed much younger, and it was almost a coincidence how I got diagnosed, because I'd gone to the doctor for something unrelated. So at this point, it's still working towards a lot of acceptance, and so a lot of the time I can sort of pass through life without, you know, really being seen as disabled or having a condition. So I guess I would consider myself more so a spoonie, but that might change, you know, in like 5-10 years, you know, as my symptoms progress.
It's an interesting conversation too, because I know that, so when we first started this podcast, Mary Beth and Chloe and I have never met. We were just like angry people on the internet, like ranting with each other. And then, so the funny thing is, when I first started talking to Mary Beth online, I just found her literally because I was scrolling through Instagram and I saw someone deadlifting with one arm. And I'm like, who the fuck is this? And like, that's how I started messaging her. And then somewhere along the line, I started having issues. And that's when I started like figuring out like, okay, I think I'll call myself a spoonie now. And like, okay, am I disabled? And I would have these conversations back and forth with her. And honestly, like, I mean, I have a job. I'm still disabled. Like, I can cook dinner. I still think I'm disabled. Like, I can still lift weights, and I still think I'm disabled just because it's not an obvious thing that I might not have to disclose it for you. I might have to disclose it for you to realize it. I don't think that makes it any less true.
Yeah, and I think part of Hope for Tattoos is spreading awareness. So, I'd love to be able to just inform people of what a tattoo is if they notice something about me, because I think that there's a lack of knowledge around it as a whole. And so I think the more people understand and realize what it is, and there's less misconceptions.
And I mean, obviously, a lot of misconceptions come from like who we are as a society, because that's what we taught everyone, right? Like, disabled people stay home, they don't work, they're in chairs, they can't do anything, and like that's the picture. So as soon as you say something outside of that, they're like, eh, not so sure. And then it doesn't get any better being a woman, and it doesn't get any better being a woman of color at all. So we have all these layers to always deal with. So I'm wondering, you said you had to experiment with different things. How has the experimenting gone? It's been a couple of years, right?
So my partner Mark and I, we both run Hope for Tattoos. So we've been starting this new thing. We've been working out every day. So we've been doing sort of, I guess, a circuit. We've been doing push-ups and V-ups, and we've been doing squats, and we're doing reps and everything. And I go for walks, and I'm finding that that helps me in terms of just keeping my muscles going. Yeah, I think it's really important for them not to atrophy. And we do boxing. He has boxing classes.
Ooh, boxing's nice. And have you gotten into a lot of weightlifting, or what else is there? Yoga, dance.
So I haven't done yoga or dance, but I used to lift. So I used to do like squat racks and like deadlifts and all of that. And then with my condition, it was just harder, and it got harder because I would involuntarily twist with like a huge weight on my body, which is not great for form. So I just had to modify, and so I just toned it back in terms of,
I mean, well, or just in terms of how you set up the way that you're lifting or what you're lifting. There's certain things that you won't do now, I'm guessing.
I mean, for me, it's definitely, making sure I have even balance. So if I'm carrying something that's really heavy, sometimes it might help to have like some weight on my body to feel more grounded. But making sure that I just don't have too much of a heavy weight that I'm lifting, and making sure that I have stability in my core. I think that's been really important for me in terms of my balance.
That's a tricky one. I know personally for me, there's a lot of few things here and there that I've learned that work best. So, besides lifting, I also do strongman and they're moving events. So, farmers carry, you pick up something, you have to pretty much briskly walk. A yoke carry is like on your back. And when I first started doing it, my legs would always cross. I'd hit the ground every time. I don't know where those feet were every time. So then I figured out, okay, like as a therapist, I'm like thinking, okay, they taught us that stroke patients don't know where their feet are and we could put a weight on it. Maybe I'll try that. I don't know where my feet are. And then I found that that worked for me. Just something that simple. So there's like a lot of little tweaks and like there's always not everything has to be a hard no. Maybe it's like, maybe let's figure this out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so much gray. I mean, the thing is, because there's so many different types of ataxia, and the symptoms really vary, there's never one hard and fast rule. Like, if you take this, it's gonna cure everything. If you take this, it's gonna work. So, experimenting with what works for you. Yoga might work really well for someone, but it might not work for someone who has a mobility aid.
Please excuse this brief interruption of your regularly scheduled unapologetic podcast. We'd like to share a great tool with those of you who are interested in starting your own. Anchor has been so easy and fun for us in the editing department. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your show right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on multiple platforms like Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and more. And it's free to use. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Yeah,
that makes sense. What else is there? I mean, I'm interested in you saying, so if you started squatting and you had trouble with twisting, so is it like you have a lot of tone, or is it more of you're trying to fire a muscle and you just get the wrong one?
I'm not really sure. I'm actually not sure how it happened, because I remember I used to, you know, lift it up with the weight, and I guess like my body would just shift as I was getting as moving up. I don't know how.
Yeah, it could be either thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you think you're straight, and they're like, Courtney, you're facing the wall.
Like, oh, oops. Like, that's your backside.
Oh, whoops! I thought I had it. For you, are you like one side dominant, or is it like little here and there, or is it pretty equal?
So I am a right side dominant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because I do tests with my neurologist and I do physio as well, and sometimes I can be stronger on my left side. So if I'm like trying to hold a pose, or if I'm stepping up on a stair or something, my left leg might be stronger than my right, and I'm able to hold better balance. So it's hard to say.
It's hard to figure out. Yeah. I think that's the other part too. When you have, well, I mean, if you have just clearly one side that's weaker, then you're like, all right, I need to focus on the weak side. But when you're like kind of like parting it out, like, oh, my right hand's weaker in the grasp, but then my left knee is less stable. That's kind of where I am. It's like, all right, but then this foot always collapses. Like, you have to keep a mental note of all of these.
The list gets really long.
So, I mean, you were into fitness before. For somebody else that has this long list of trying to keep track of what's what would be your advice for fitness?
So I know what worked for me was going to physiotherapy, taking walks. I think that's worked for me. I know for some people that they might have more aggressive forms of ataxia. It's different story. It's harder to be able to walk and have the same mobility. So I think it has to be taken on a case by case basis in terms of, you know, what they're able to do.
Well, I think if it's possible that most people could probably start out with, like you said, a physiotherapist, and they can help them figure out, like, this is how your body moves now. Mm-hmm. And maybe from there they could figure out what works with them in fitness.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think, you know, ataxia is a specific condition with so many different symptoms that, you know, having, you know, a PT that has, you know, some knowledge of neurological conditions, whether it's something similar like Parkinson's or MS, something along those lines, can be really helpful.
Definitely. I think so. I think that would probably be a good starting point. If someone has absolutely no idea whatsoever, just maybe start with a medical professional and, like, find your body first and figure that out. But I do also wonder, so ataxia is a movement disorder, mm-hmm. but are there other things that come along with it, or, you know, different types that have, for example, we just talked to someone, well, her episode should be out by the time this is out, and she has Holt-Oram syndrome, which comes with like a different shape of arms, but also tacked along with that is heart problems. You wouldn't think that's related. So is your disorder related, or, you know, the genetic ones? I don't mean the acquired ones. The genetic disorders come with something else?
So the symptoms can range from anything from like just lack of coordination, slurred speech, and then having trouble eating and swallowing, difficulty walking, tremors, even heart problems, eye movement problems. And it's because it affects the cerebellum, which is like the powerhouse of the balance of coordination of the brain. And as the disease progresses, other parts also get affected. So that's why the symptoms can also expand as well. But yeah, so things like, you know, like swelling can be affected, and, you know, even heart problems and things like that. But with different types, it's also hard to say. With my specific type, I really won the lottery. So I have a recessive type of ataxia. So both my parents are carriers, and they both had to give me the gene so right. that I actually show ataxia. So I had a 1 in 4 chance of actually getting it. So with anything that's dominant, you just have to have one copy of the gene. And so it's a damaged gene. It's like a mutated gene, essentially, that's being passed down through the family.
Right. So you got your 1 in 4.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's progressive, meaning that over time it's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So does it change in one direction, or can you get worse and better, worse and better?
It's hard to say. I don't know. I think it's going to get worse. The rate might be slower. So, you know, I might still be walking in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere else, a different type of ataxia might not be.
Right.
So, I think it's more the rate.
Right. There's also the chance that people probably just don't know, right? It's only a couple of hundred of you. Like, how many studies could there have been on what happens, you know, after 30 years with it? They might just not know.
Yeah, and they're still discovering types of ataxia there. So, you know, like, my type is so rare. There's so many different types out there that, like you said, there's not a lot of studies. And you know, the symptoms can be all over the board.
Well, what is your background? Like, did you go to school? Are you working? What are you up to separate from Hope from Ataxia?
Yeah. So I am currently working. I work full time right now. I work an office job. So I'm mostly sitting at a desk. And I went to university. So I did psych and I did health studies.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm asking because I'm wondering. So in this whole situation, now you had a 1 in 4 chance to get something. Now you got it. Super rare. Nobody knows anything about it. So do you find yourself doing a lot of searching into research or looking things up on your own?
Definitely. So when I first got diagnosed, it was tough because, you know, I was 25, young Asian female. No one I knew had what I had. It originated out of Quebec. So it's named after an area in Quebec called Beauce, Quebec. Mm-hmm. And that's where it came from. The people that were understudy, there's 5 or 6 people, I'm not sure. They're still living. So we don't even know what the end result is.
Right.
My doctors don't know what my end result will be, what the progression is going to look like. So it was difficult because when you look online, it can be really intense, can lead to like death or something. It's, you know, when you look things up, it's always, you know, it's like, wow. So, you know, finding online communities and getting connected with different people definitely helped. Definitely, because it's a rare disease. Connecting with people through social media globally, finding out that there are people around the world who are also young and who are diagnosed really helped create that connection.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure it has. I know for me, a lot of it has. So I, you know, like I said, I'm a physical therapist. So I've gone to school. And I know what research is and I know how to look it up and look into it. So I probably do. Every day, I'm probably looking up random articles all the time, just on random stuff. Like, I might see a commercial for, I don't know, a cryo tank, and I'd be like, oh, is that going to be good for me? I'll just go on PubMed, cryotherapy, muscle spasms, and just, like, scroll. Like, this wasn't my life before. this is my reality now. Like, I'm just always randomly looking shit up.
Yeah, definitely. It's like now it's like, oh, I'm gonna look, what does this definition mean? Oh, and I also think about it in terms of how other people are feeling so isolated as well. And the more information I have, I can hopefully better support other people who might have been in the same situation I was, feeling lost and confused and not knowing what to do.
And it's so tough because I feel like that at its very core is super noble, right? Like, I want to teach myself something and I'm going to share it with other people so they could catch up to speed. We go on this journey together, kind of a vibe. Like, super noble.
Oh,
But
thank you.
I really hope that, like, you keep on pushing there. But it sucks because there are people that say that, but what they're doing is not coming from that real place. You know, like, in the end, they're just trying to sell you, like, a fucking diet book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that can happen, I guess. Yeah.
It's really nice to hear someone that actually means it,
Yeah.
I guess is what I'm trying to say. And because it's hard, it's hard. Imagine that you're that lost, because you and you can, because you were, maybe you still are a little bit. Like, we're not totally figured this out. Like, you're that lost person, and you go online, and somebody's like, "I'll help you," and you go on their little ClickFunnels website, and you sign up for their newsletter, then you get like five spammy emails every day, and the next thing you know, they're like selling you a book, they're selling you something to the Facebook group, like they're selling, like, oh.
Yeah, it can be hard to navigate sometimes for sure.
But how do you, I mean, it's a pretty rare disorder, so maybe that's how you set yourself apart. But how do you think that you guys set yourself apart to not be okay? Hope for a Taxi is legit. They're here for us. They're not just trying to sell us something.
Yeah, so I think what really makes us apart from everyone else is that we built a rapport with the people that we know, and we really publish things that are from personal experiences. So we have a really great blog that we started called Faces of Ataxia, where we'll interview caregivers, people with ataxia, and we try to share user stories. And so that's really something about us. We don't focus on research. We don't focus on finding a cure, but really it's providing the support and really showing other people different stories of other people they can relate to as well.
So, like, what your mission of what you're doing is very clear by the actions that you're taking. Like, hello, we exist. Hi, these are some stories, and like, that's it. I think that's probably what makes it pretty clear that you guys are trying to do something good. And I hope that that's what we show also on our pages. Like, sure, we sell some shirts, like we got stickers, but at the end of the day, like, we're not trying to be a clothing company, right? Like, we're just trying to make a community of disabled girls that lift weights or do yoga or just do some burpees or whatever, wherever it is, and they couldn't find anywhere else to kind of explore that part of themselves. So, I mean, I'm glad stuff like this is popping up, and I hope more of it pops up. I hope the people trying to sell shit just go away.
Well, it was funny because the way I found you guys was I was looking at podcast in the disability community, and I came across your website, and I thought, wow, you guys are really making an impact and a positive impact, and that's something that we really look for Hope for Taxi. And we do our support groups, and we have speakers that come on. We look for people that are active and they're inspirational, motivational, and I think the big thing is people see people with disabilities as other, as they can't, and we want to show that you can rise above that. You can actually do more than what people think you can do.
And it's funny because it's like, yes, we want to be inspirational, but we mean that like to ourselves. Like, I'm like, you're gonna inspire me, the other disabled person, to know that I can do more. It, like, be because inspiration porn is a different conversation. That's not what we're talking about. Just so everyone's clear. Just to make sure. That's pretty awesome that you mentioned how you found this though. But you'd be surprised, and I'm sure you have some of that on your end. How many people just message us like, "Yo, you guys exist? Like, I have this random disorder you were talking about in this one episode, and I feel so seen." Like,
Oh, that's amazing. I mean,
it's so great.
that's amazing. If anyone can hear this and says, oh, hey, I have a taxi too, like that where it starts, you know.
Yeah, because like you said before, this is a lonely place to be. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have people around you that, it's not that they don't care, but like they just can't understand what you're going through.
Exactly, yeah. And I think the way society is structured makes it hard for that sort of dialogue to happen as well.
Yeah, that's true. And Anna, so you mentioned your partner, you guys run Hope for Ataxia. Do you have a support system? Do you have friends and family near you that are helping you or know what you have going on?
Yeah, so I live with my parents, and my mom is my caregiver, so she really helps me keep me on track with my diet, and she takes walks with me, and so she's really involved in everything I'm going through. I actually recently told my extended family about, like, probably about 7 months ago, so it's kind of fresh there, and it took me a while. I think for me, acceptance is definitely an ongoing process, you know, for me, because I'm experiencing some symptoms, but I know that it's progressive. I'm accepting them as my life changes and I'm adjusting to that. So it's definitely something that is ongoing. And I think, you know, I want to let everyone know that it's okay to be in that sort of gray area and to accept it every day.
So you've just gotten into disclosing it to extended family. Are they kind of confused or because like your parents are with you every day, maybe they'll catch on.
Yeah. I mean, I think even my parents, when I first got diagnosed, like, what is this? Like, what is this? And then it all went back to, okay, well, that's why there needs to be more awareness. I mean, no one knows what it is. I told my extended family, and it's hard to grasp because I don't have a mobility aid. So it's not that you can physically see the difference. It's hard to explain. And I think it might also be a cultural thing as well, in terms of, you know, having that language of disability, and having that sort of conversation as well. But yeah, it was definitely difficult in that lack of sort of understanding and knowledge. And so that really made me think, okay, this is why we need to have more awareness.
Definitely. And is most of your family in Canada or are they elsewhere? When you say cultural, do you mean like a Western idea or Eastern or whatever? I'm so lost on geography right now. I'm sorry. So, you get what I mean, I hope.
Yeah, I do. Most of my family is actually overseas. I have a lot of family in Hong Kong, and some in Singapore. So they're kind of spread out on the East and in East Asia. I'm really grateful that, you know, my mom has been my greatest supporter, and, you know, she's definitely been everything, loving towards me, and she's definitely ridden the waves as I've gone through it as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, I know for me and personally, I know that there's certain people in my life that don't understand my illness, they don't understand what I need out of life, they don't understand what I'm doing with my life, and like created, like, they're not gonna hold that space for me then, that's all. And I'll, you know, either I'll find that for myself or I'll find that in somebody else. But like the space of like needing the support of I'm going through this illness and I need some help, they're not going to hold it for me.
Yeah. And definitely, you know, it's definitely a hard for other people as well. You know, it definitely speaks to their own experiences and what, you know, it can be really uncomfortable for some people.
It can be.
Yeah.
But that's why we exist and these kind of groups exist, because you can find somebody halfway across the world that's like, yeah, me too, man.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because it's hard. It's such a lonely place, and you need to have that somebody or someone out there holding that space for you. And if you haven't found yet out there, I hope you do, because it does make all the difference. We really can't conquer this all on our own.
Yeah, I mean, it helps so much to have that socialization and that someone who understands exactly what you're going through and having that connection it means the world. You know, it makes going through this journey a little bit easier.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure it does. I'm glad that you have your parents with you and you kind of have someone to go along that journey with you, because that could be pretty scary knowing that, okay, maybe this will get worse. I don't know when, I don't know how. Do you find yourself with a lot of anxiety on that, or are you still in that? Because you talk about accepting it every day.
Mm-hmm.
But does it keep you up at night?
It doesn't keep me up at night, thankfully. I think I'm very, you know, happy with where I am right now, and I'm really happy with the community we've created with Hope for a Taxi, and that's what keeps me going. I think that you know, knowing more people and just having more knowledge, I think a lot of it is just, you know, understanding what might be coming and you know, taking it day by day.
Yeah, that's all you could do, kind of try to find peace somewhere. Because I know I was talking to Andrea in a different episode, and she has some of the things that I probably have, who knows, but that does keep her up at night. Like, she does wonder, like, oh, what if they miss this, and then all of a sudden I have a heart attack. Like she really hasn't found that. Do you have any advice for someone in that moment, or in that space, I guess?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think... It's tough for me because I think I'm still going through it. So it's something that I will definitely be dealing with at some point. And I think, you know, having a strong support system, I mean, I think like for me, that's what I'm going to lean on, is having people that I can talk to, having family, friends that you know, they might not understand exactly what you're going through, but having someone who's able to listen and be there. I think that means a lot, and definitely going online, social networks, you know, people who are in the exact same situation can also provide some comfort.
Yeah, for sure. And do you find yourself seeking like mental health services, or do you meditate on your own, or do you journal or anything like that?
So I don't meditate, but I think therapy is definitely something everyone should have. I have a background, and I really care a lot about like social work and mental health, and so I think that everyone should just have a therapist. I think that'd be great. I think definitely, you know, to have someone to talk to is a great outlet.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we try to explore that a little bit, because there's so much also. Like, with every intersection that you add in your life, there's, like, more trauma that you deal with. There's this trauma of disability. Mm-hmm. There's the trauma, I'm sure you encounter racism, and I'm sure you encounter sexism. And there's all of these things that you have to unpack. And, like, if you don't have someone to talk to, or if you feel like you need someone that doesn't know who you are at all, just to help you figure out how to get through it, that's what therapy is great for, honestly.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. And I think there's still sort of a bit of a stigma around that. And, you know, it's all about, you know, seeking out help and being okay with that. And there's really nothing wrong with that. You know, everyone,
no, not at all.
You know, whatever you need.
There's nothing at all wrong with it. I think there's a lot of hang-ups about it. Like, oh, if I see a shrink, I'm not crazy. Like, no, it's not. Everybody has a mind, and everybody's dealing with something. So
yeah.
Everyone could have therapy.
Yeah.
So in your, we're kind of close to 1 hour here. So I do want to circle back to, you mentioned you have stuff online for the group for Hope for Ataxia. Is this regularly scheduled stuff, like every month we meet on this and talk, or do you have guests? Are there online discussions? How are you organized?
Yeah, so we have a weekly support group every Friday at 3 and 6 p.m. and then every 14 weeks we'll have guest speakers. So we have 5 sessions, and we have 5 to accommodate different time zones. So people are overseas and like that. So we have from 9 a.m. All the way to 9 p.m. So we have 5 during the day. And we find people who are in the disability community who are really positive and make a positive impact.
Nice. That sounds awesome. And what's the best way for someone to find out about this stuff? Website, Facebook? Like, where should they go first?
Yeah, definitely. So our Facebook page is the best place to find us. So we are at Hope for Ataxia on Facebook. We also have a website. So we have our Faces of Ataxia blog there. You can sign up for any of our support groups there as well. So it's hopeforataxia.org. And you can find us on Instagram and Twitter. We're Hope for Ataxia.
Perfect. And again, thanks for reaching out to us. I'm glad you found us. I'm glad we found you.
Yeah.
I do want to make it clear that once you come on this podcast, you are now a disabled girl who lifts. This is a community. You are now in the family. So you want to come back and chat, you come back. Well, because of this whole COVID situation, we've been doing more online things. Mm-hmm. If you want to be online with us, come hop on our Instagram, whatever, what have you. You want to talk about anything at all, we're here. You want to blog on our thing, whatever. You want to make a t-shirt together. I don't know. Whatever you want. You can't get rid of us now.
Oh,
that's the point.
Great. I'll forward to it.
Yeah. Anything, I mean, we talked about so many things here. Hope for Ataxia, Ataxia itself, a little bit about Toronto because I don't know anything about Canada. You know, disclosure, identity, mental health, so many things. But is there any like one random thing that you just wanted to get out that we missed?
We've covered a lot of things, and I don't really have anything to add. I think if you have any questions or anything, you can always find us on Facebook and leave us a comment. It was great to be on this podcast and, you know, great to share my story and to be able to spread some more awareness.
Yeah, definitely. We all love to hear it. And if you have ataxia and have specific questions, you could find Courtney and hit her up, talk to her, maybe join the support group, maybe have a little fun finding people like you. We're like the I don't know if you ever watch Arrested Development, but we're like the Never Nudes, man. We gotta find each other. Oh man. All right, Disabled Girls out.
Thanks for listening to Disabled Girls Who Left. We appreciate all of your support and everyone who's taken the time to show us some love. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, or write a review of our channel. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Player FM, Google Podcasts, and more. You can also find us on Instagram @DisabledGirlsWhoLift.